Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday. TGIF here on Sports Daily. We are so glad to be with you, getting you ready for the weekend. It is Jacob Albracht alongside Tommy Kester. Jad Chambers producing. He's got the IHOP hotline for you. 869-1240. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, by the way. All your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. It is a Friday. It is the eve of the American League Divisional Series. It includes an old, old rivalry between the Royals and the Yankees. I know fans are excited about that. We're excited about that. We'll take a deep dive into that series today. We'll take a deep dive into the football weekend with our pals Paul Savage, TJ Cleland, Brandon Zinner. They stopped by to make some picks. I know Jad is really excited to go over last week's results, so we'll let Jad do that as well. He's been begging to go over those results from last week. Not sure why, but we'll do that a little later in the show. We'll preview a little bit the Chiefs. We get some Rashee Rice news that we need to get to today and what does it mean and everything moving forward. So we'll have that for you as well. College football weekend, it's all coming for you. You had Thursday night football last night. We've got some giveaways today. We'll give away a little HTO for you as well, a chance to win some free tea and free coffee. So be sure to tune in and stay tuned for your opportunity to win that. You can get in touch with the program, not just on that IHOP hotline, but you can reach out to us via video as well. 12 News Plus connected, where you can see us. We appreciate everybody that watches there on your smart devices, on your phones, whatever it is. Also on Facebook, YouTube, and X, you can reach out to us. And you can leave us your voicemails on the Odyssey app. If you don't listen to us live over the air, but you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, you can leave us that voice message. We'll get that. It's real easy to do. You just push the little microphone while you're listening, and that comes straight to us. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm tired today. I don't know why. You know, when we were younger, probably like in our 20s, maybe even as a teenager, you get to Friday and you just feel energized because it's the weekend and you're excited about it. Now I get to Friday and I'm exhausted. It's just like a long week. And I feel it this morning, but we're going to power through. We're going to be okay. Going to try to drink all the coffee possible and get through it.
We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for allowing Tommy to do that. There's like a vat of it at the Odyssey Studios that we stay pretty fueled up with. So thanks, Prairie Fire. I'm with you. I think it's the kids. We ran a story yesterday on 12 News, and I read it, about like when you feel the effects of aging. And I think it said like 44 and 60. And I'm like,
no,
I don't know about that. I would say more like the second you have a kid, and then it just kind of goes from there. I do recall, and I think I was about 27 years old, where hangovers became real bad. Like, oh, what is this? Like, oh my goodness, this sucks. I would say that was the first moment, and now it's more like your body hurts and it takes a while to recover from things. Your kid, I'm with you. But 44, I don't know that I agree with the medical experts on that one. I think it comes much sooner.
Yeah, try being in your late 30s with little kids. That really will do it. And you and I are both in the same boat. Your kids are a little bit older than mine. But I mean, that's rough. And I always think, you know, when my kids are like, hey, get on the floor and play with me, daddy. And I'm like, man, if I were 10 years younger, I would have all the energy in the world to do that. And now if I get on the floor, I worry I can't get back up. So, it is what it is. We actually, my wife and I had our oldest son is now in preschool, and, we got our first, not positive report from the teacher, yesterday, which, you know, that was kind of jarring. That's never happened before, like in my life.
Perfect, right?
Well, for sure. And, you know, it's like, well, he's having a little bit of trouble listening. I mean, a little bit of trouble following the rules. And, you know, the teacher asked, how do you get him to listen? And we were like, honestly, if you can figure it out, please tell us, because we're trying that too every day.
I have my two older kids are girls, and they're perfect angels most of the time. Like, they don't get in trouble. Like, the thought of getting in trouble at school is a threat enough for them. My son just started kindergarten. And when they get in trouble, they have to walk laps. It's like question every day off the bus. Did you walk laps today?
Yeah.
I would walk overlapped. Usually just talking in class or whatever, but it's so funny. Like, and for the girl, like before he can even get it out, the girls get off the bus. He had to walk laps today. And I'm like, okay, narcs, like, right. Let's not do that. Right. Like, he's your brother. You got to defend him. You got to try and like help him out here. But yeah, it's the same kind of thing. He's just talking and he's so excited. He's never met a stranger in his life. So he's walking some laps, and my wife used to be a little more concerned about it. And I'm like, don't be concerned about that. Like, he's not, if he's fighting, like, well, yeah, we'll be concerned. But if he's just talking, I said, we used to have to do push-ups when I was in school. And you didn't make it through most days without doing 40, 50 push-ups.
Right.
You just decided to run your mouth or whatever it was. Like, it's just a part of being a guy.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that we're working on with our 3-year-old that we're getting reports about is, and they always, I love the way that they try to frame it, you know, so it like kind of softens the words, you know, but the teacher will be like, well, we might need to talk to him about keeping his hands to himself.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you're telling me that he's like,
stop
pushing, hitting, punch, like whatever it is, you know, and it's just like, well, you know, he and his little friends, they, you know, they kind of like, they're roughhousing, they're 3-year-old boys, like they're wrestling with each other. Like, that's part, and I'm not trying to downplay it and say you shouldn't do that, but at the same time, it's like,
downplay it for sure. Okay, I got the same report at for my son in preschool, same report. The terminology is one of my favorite things. I don't remember if they said like soft hands or
it's soft, gentle hands, soft hands.
Yes.
You know, we don't touch our
wrestling
friends,
every day at
you know,
recess.
Things like that.
They'd go at recess and they'd wrestle. And I'm like, that's not bad. Like, that's what they do. Like, yeah, we'll tell him like, hey, you need to, but on the side, I'm like, Michelle, this is totally normal. She's never been around. My wife has never been around. She had a sister and her mom, and I had all boys. And I mean, I had my mom, but I was the youngest of 5 boys at that point. She didn't stand a chance. So like, we have to help each other with what's happening. And I'm like, that you don't need to worry about this. Like, 2 things, boys wrestle. I always tell her this. I'm like, we can tell our daughters that the oven's hot and they're not going to touch that oven. Our son's going to make sure he's going to touch that oven just to make sure it's hot. Like, we're idiots. We're dumb.
It's
we
very true.
Run into things like, that's the way it is.
And we don't outgrow it.
Absolutely.
That's
why I think we understand it though. Like, I get where you're coming from. You're just wrestling around with your buddies. Like, I get it. Did you win?
Right.
You know, like, that's you know, that's the reality of it. I try to give her that. And she tries to give me advice with the girls. And it's helpful because we have a 4th grader. And, you know, there's emotions coming into the mix where I'm like, what is happening here? And she, you know, she's trying to help me. But with the son, I'm like, two pieces of advice. Like, we're dumb. We're going to fight and wrestle and play. And like, you can't overreact to that. And 2, as he gets older, don't ask questions you don't want the answer to, right? Like, just if you think you know the answer, you know the answer, and leave him alone. That, you know, like that, that's kind of the way you got to do it here. And it's very different. It's gonna be hard for her. But yeah, we're with you on that. So just know that our son also had soft hands and made what they called some sad choices in class. And now he walks laps because, you know, it's fine. It's what they do.
All the different strategies now in today's world with kids compared to when we were kids. And I'm sure even before that, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned like making sad choices. The terminology now, like with our son is, you know, you need to make a smart choice. And I'm like, okay, well, he's a little boy. He's an idiot. Like, I'm not sure that there's going to be a lot of smart choices. There's going to be some really sad ones, you know, as the years go on.
Sad choices is, I use that now. Like, the second I heard that, if you went out and you partied too hard and you're texting your buddies the next day of like how bad everyone feels, usually it's, I really wish I wouldn't have made so many sad choices last night. I'm really regretting those. So anywho, man, what a time to be alive. JB on our video stream said he noticed the aging starting at 38, and that it's gradual. We're clear of that age now, JB. I noticed it earlier. I noticed it once we started having kids and I just stopped sleeping. Basically, we're to the point now where we can get a little more sleep into it. You're not quite there yet on that, but it comes. Yes, Chad.
I was just going to say, as somebody who doesn't have kids, that expert sounded about right. It was like 44.
44.
Okay.
Good to know. That was about right.
And that's, I could totally see that because physically, like, I feel things a little more, but it's not that bad. Like, usually you're just stiff for a minute and then it's gone, right? Like, it doesn't stay there, which probably is the shift at at 44. Anywho, you can chime in on any of the things we talk about, including life here on Sports Daily. Let's real quick, we'll set you up with this news here on Rashee Rice, and then we'll come back and we'll react to it a little bit. IR, it was a weird day of news yesterday. So what happened was you had Andy Reid come first in his you know, press briefing. And he basically said they're waiting for the swelling to go down so they can do more testing. And, quote, we'll see from there. Okay, so that comes down. And that tells me there's optimism. Honestly, that tells me there's optimism. Because I don't recall a time, Tommy, where it's been a torn ACL and they just didn't know it was a torn ACL right away. Swelling, no swelling, whatever. Like, when was the last time you remember a long and drawn out torn ACL diagnosis? And this is anecdotally. I'm not a doctor. I'd revert to Earl on this, one of our great callers who enlightens us in these places. So I would say, okay, well, that has to be at least optimistic. And then we get the news later in the day that the Chiefs are placing him on IR. And I think Adam Schefter was based at least in the lower third, because it was muted, that the thought is still torn ACL. Going to IR, I don't think means anything. He was always going to miss 4 weeks, even if this was the bone bruise sprain kind of stuff that you've seen. It was going to be four. It makes sense to put him on IR because you can use the roster space. But I don't think that means much. That's the official news of the day, Tommy. But I mean, I think it's at least better, you know, a better vibe than it was on Sunday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, again, until we know something definitive, until they know something definitive, it's going to make it really difficult to assess, you know, the long term timeline and trajectory of all of it. I do think that we ought to hope for the best, prepare for the worst. I think every Chiefs fan ought to do that. I think the team ought to do that as well. And if you get him back at some point in the season, consider that a bonus. Consider that, you know, a blessing. I think that, I mean, obviously he's on IR. It'll be a minimum of 4 weeks. But even if this comes back best case scenario, I have a hard time thinking that it's only going to be 4 weeks. And maybe I'm wrong on that. Again, I'm not a doctor, but you know, I'm sure that even best case scenario, you're probably looking at the latter part of the season, maybe the last few games, potentially, maybe. And then from there, I think really the hope would be, can you get him ready to go for the playoffs? And I wonder, and it brings up a big time question, I think. Let's just say, hypothetically speaking, the Chiefs get Rashee Rice back and available for the playoffs, and Hollywood Brown back and available for the playoffs. Those two guys haven't played together at all. They practiced together, but they haven't played together at all. How do you incorporate both of them into this offense for a playoff run? And then depending on if the Chiefs do anything additional, you know, with an acquisition of some kind, I just think that might be really convoluted.
Totally agree. And, you know, in the spirit of giving a hard time to you, that's why I would say, like, we don't know Hollywood Brown. That's why he was in the preseason, all of these things. I agree. I don't know what you would be able to do with him. He has not played a game. It was the first snap of game action he took for the Chiefs that he went down. So all he knows is practice. That's it. I think you could still use him, but you're not going to be able to use him at full strength. Not unless, I mean, the only scenario is maybe if, you know, if you get the bye and you could work him in for 2 weeks of practice at that point, I suppose. But that feels a little risky. And you got to remember too, like, Worthy will have become a bigger part of the offense than the last time Hollywood Brown was practicing. So it's different even than the work he already got in. I don't know. For Rice, I wouldn't be as concerned, obviously, because he's been in the offense. I think Rice could plug and play and be just fine. Would Hollywood being there alter Rice? Probably not. I don't think so. So yeah, you just hope you can get anybody back. What I think becomes really interesting, if you tell me, and I try to, like, if I'm Brett Veach and you tell me, yeah, we'll have Rice back if we make the postseason, then I'm far less inclined to do much, if anything at all, between now and then, unless our backs are against the wall. And right now, the Chiefs' backs are not against the wall. They're 4-0. And they're 4-0 knowing a style of football without Rice to get there. They didn't have Rice not that long ago, and they figured out an offensive style that allowed Mahomes to throw 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns and all these things 2 years ago when they didn't have any wide receivers either. So I would be, you know, I would be fine if I knew, if I'm Veach and I know Rice is going to be back by the postseason, then I'm cool just kind of rolling with it here for a little bit. If they find out he's not, that's when things change. That's when I would become aggressive, because I do think you push all your chips to the middle of the table for this season. And I'm usually not a proponent of that, but I am for this season. History's there. Kelsey's probably done after this year, at least I think, but I could be wrong about that. But there's lots of reasons to push chips to the middle of the table this year, if necessary. But if Rice is back in the postseason, I don't think it's necessary.
It's fun to speculate on potential names that they could go after and acquire and all of that. But from day one, I mean, all the way back on Monday, I cautioned that, you know, it's not really Brett Veach's MO traditionally to do this. And I know all of the different things that, you know, you've brought up and other people have brought up about, like, well, he has traded first round picks before to go get, you know, a guy that he wants. Yeah, but not midseason. And the acquisitions that he's made from a wide receiver perspective midseason, one was Mecole Hardman, who already had familiarity. The other one was Kadarius Toney, which was always going to be a project from day one, and had
that
more
was a third round pick. That was a pretty aggressive trade. That's, I forgot about that.
You know, so like I just don't think that, like, Brett Veach does. He's never striked me. Never struck me as whatever it is, as a general manager that is reactive. He's never really been a reactive in the moment, right? Like, yeah, in the middle of a season, like, this happened, now I'm forced to go and respond.
No,
but
I don't.
From
think
a trade perspective, he's been proactive.
Think he's aggressive,
I think. He's aggressive,
yes.
But he wants to be proactive, which, yes, to me would signal that if they do make any kind of move or acquisition, if this ends up being a long-term injury for Rashee Rice, that it's not a push all the chips in at the middle of the table for right now and nothing else. It's going to be more about how can we set ourselves up for future success also. That's really been his MO.
Well, but proactive to me too, that's what that would mean. Because the proactive thing to do is to see, if Rice is done, to see the writing on the wall. He's going to be done for probably half the year at minimum next year. And who knows what happens with Hollywood Brown, who is on a short contract anyway. That's what tells me he would be proactive in being aggressive to get a receiver, because you've got to look not just at your chances this year, but what are they going to do next year? And if there's an opportunity to go get somebody that helps you now and in the future, that does make sense. The reservations I have on trying to guess whether they would or not is that they've never invested a ton of money in wide receivers. They've invested draft capital, tons. They traded for Toney. They drafted Sky Moore. They drafted Worthy. Like, they have used, they're not afraid of the draft capital piece of receiver. They just don't want to pay them. And so that's where different names and different things come into play. And I mean, who's the last receiver they really paid? What's his face from Clemson? His name just slipped my mind.
They paid Jeremy Maclin.
After that.
Did they pay Sammy Watkins?
Sammy Watkins, yes. Yeah. They paid Sammy Watkins, yeah.
I know they paid Jeremy Maclin, and that was years ago, but
right. Watkins,
they paid him
they
a lot.
They paid Watkins a decent amount, but since then, they've been sort of a discount receiver team. And so we'll see. But again, if Rice is back, if Rice doesn't miss the postseason, I don't know that they need to do anything. I think you just sort of ride it out a little bit. Because if Rice is back, if it's that injury and you know he'll be back and he won't have any ill effects, that she shouldn't on an injury like that, and you just welcome him back in the postseason, you get there. Now, if something, you know, if they lose their next four games or something, then maybe you change your tune on that, but I don't think that's going to happen. We'll tell you what we think is going to happen Monday as we make our picks in the next hour. All right, so that's the Rashee Rice news. Check that off. If you'd like to chime in on that, we can go back to it. But when we come back, we're going to talk ALDS, Royals, Yankees. The old guard of Royals fans know this means a little something extra when it's against the Yankees. The young Royals fans get to just hate on the Yankees, which is always fun to do, right? We'll come back. We'll preview that series. It's all Brockton Caster at Sports Daily. Don't go away.
And 1240 KFN.
Portion portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. We appreciate Crestview's support of the show. Tom and I both members out there. We think you should give them a call and check out the facilities. Maybe you could be too. All kinds of different memberships. I went out and played about 7 holes yesterday, Tommy. Felt good just to get back out there. It doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what I do or how I play on any particular hole. I usually end up right at the, like, somewhere between 10 and 12 over 9 holes every single time. Like, so, whether there's a good or hole or two or whatever, it's like the same ending outcome every time. Now, I will say, especially yesterday when I haven't played in a while, there was some foot wedge involved. But it, generally speaking, like, my game is just right there. That's where it is, and it doesn't seem to be moving.
One question, how often do you practice?
You mean by practice, do you mean when I actually go play?
No. Like, when do you practice your game? Like, on the range or on the putting green or the chipping green?
You know, I'd say probably
never?
Zero time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That happened to me a long time ago, and I was getting frustrated because I wasn't getting any better, wasn't, you know, playing any better. And a buddy of mine who's pretty good, I was complaining to him, and he's like, how often do you practice? I'm like, well, I don't. I just go out and play. And he's like, well, then what do you expect? You're not practicing. You're just going out and playing. I mean, like, it's fun to go and play, but if you actually truly want to get better and improve your score, you got to practice in anything you do.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of do and I kind of don't. I feel good about, like, as long as I'm not getting embarrassed on the court, I'm pretty good. Like, you know, if I can hit good shots and do those things, it's when you're constantly duffing that's fun. The time that I did go out and practice and do all that stuff, that's when I probably enjoyed golf the least. Like, when I would get really, really upset at a round, I'm like, that's not as fun as just coming out and playing. So I don't know if I'll ever get there. Anyway, Crestview, 36 holes of golf. Lots of opportunities. Course looks great right now, by the way. So check it out. Give them a call. Tell us. Tell them we sent you. Appreciate their support. All right, ALDS. Here you go, Royals fans. Let's dig in. We know that Waka gets the ball in game one. We know that Reagans gets the ball in game two. We assume that Lugo will get the ball in game three. The first real question of the series will come in game four. We look back at the regular season here. The Royals did not fare well against the Yankees. They were 2-5 this year. They didn't hit. That was the issue. They scored 24 runs over 7 games, Tommy. I can do the math, but that's not very good. So I think You sort of reset things in the postseason. I don't know, you know, how many of those games they played. And the good news is they did win 2 of the last 4. So they lost the first 3, and then they won 2 of the last 4. They had that great, it was Lugo, right, that was on the mound for that really, really nice game on the road in September when they kind of had to have it. But I think you can wash your hands of just about everything right now in the regular season, especially with this Royals team. The only thing you could really look at is how the pitchers fared against that lineup at times, and they will. They'll study that, obviously. But I think you washed your hands of the Orioles series. I think they were 2-4 against the Orioles this year. So really, what difference does it make? But that is just FYI what happened in the regular season against the Yankees this year.
I wonder about which Royals mentality I prefer, like, where the team is better. Are they better when they are the hunter, or are they better when they're the hunted? Like, when their backs are up against a wall, when they're facing elimination potentially, or they're about to stumble their way out of the playoffs? Or is it better when they're riding momentum and they're playing really well and they're feeding off of that energy? We've seen both from the Royals this year to varying levels of success depending on the time of year and a lot of other factors. But I was thinking about that yesterday. Like, would I rather the Royals, you'd always rather them just run over everybody, right? And you know, not have to be challenged, you know, at all. That'd be nice. But that's not reality. So do the Royals respond better when they're the aggressor, when they're riding the momentum, or are they better when their backs are up against a wall and they have to have it?
I don't know that I would say they're better when their backs are against the wall, because we've seen the longer losing streaks in the season. I don't think it's going to matter, because there's never going to be any point in the remaining postseason, trying to imagine a scenario, there's not going to be a point going into any series where they're not the underdog, right? Like, especially before a series starts. Now, if they go up 2-0 on the Yankees, obviously that would change, but doesn't matter who they play the rest of the way, they are the underdog now of this postseason. That's not going to change. The Tigers, everybody's talking about the Tigers. They're red hot, all these things. And honestly, I think we could be thankful for that because nobody's paying attention to the Royals, right? At least that's what probably nationally, obviously we are. And, you know, people that really follow baseball are, but like fans or like the vibe in general, nobody's really looking at the Royals. And what that means is nobody has a good grasp of what this team is. I think the free and easy Royals are the best Royals, but free and easy comes with aggression. You know what I mean? Swag. Like, this is a swaggy team. So if they're confident, I'm confident. I don't like them as much with their backs against the wall. They haven't responded well in that scenario this year several times. They've had long losing streaks, right? They're capable of that. They're also capable of the long winning streak we know now. And so, yeah, I want them confident. I want them confident and everybody else overlooking them a little bit and so they can sneak up on you. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. just showed you in a series that he can carry it. He can carry the series. He just did against the Orioles. He had the two game-winning RBIs, had some incredible defensive plays. Like, they're going to need more offense than that, but he carried the series. You have that. You know you have that if you're the Royals. Now you see if Vinny can continue to add to the lineup. He can. He looked good to me. Can Salvi get on one of his heaters? Which is, when Salvi's on a heater, there may not be a hotter heater in baseball than when Salvi's on one. Can you catch one of those? He did not look good to me in that series.
I've mentioned it before that I don't know if there is another team in Major League Baseball currently that the pendulum swings so far from one direction to another in such a short period of time. I mean, less than 2 weeks ago, they were riding a 7-game losing streak. They were in danger of missing the playoffs. They had just gotten swept at home by the Giants, a team that didn't make the playoffs. That was the first time, and really the only time, that I've seen this entire season where, like, the body language was really bad. Like, they were down bad. There were articles written about the clubhouse and just how, you know, it was very close to just, you know, completely losing the clubhouse and just falling apart and collapsing the final week of the regular season. And then here we are. They sweep the Orioles in the wild card round after making it into the playoffs by turning things around in the final week of the regular season for the most part. And then, you know, here they are taking on the Yankees in game one of the ALDS tomorrow night. That's in less than 2 weeks. That's a less than 2 week span where, you know, the mentality, the body language, all of that shifted so dramatically. And we've seen that pendulum swing multiple times this year. Maybe not that far down. Like, again, that's the only time I've realized that it was that bad for a while. But there were really down periods this season, and then, of course, really high periods this season as well. Again, I don't think that there's another team in baseball that we've seen the roller coaster be so dramatic. Every team has it over the course of a long season, but I don't think to this extent.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Timing is everything in baseball, especially in the postseason. The Royals are not playing their best baseball right now. As far as the best baseball we've seen this team play this year, it's not right now. It's not.
Offensively, so, at least.
But the best version of this team has been the offense, you know, coming with the pitching where it is now. I think with the pitching, we've seen pitching, the pitching staff, at least in the rotation, get back to sort of what we're used to. And we've seen that for a few weeks now. They sort of got through that hump in August and got over that innings, you know, threshold straight. And now they're grooving to the point where we kind of saw them most of the season. That's why I'm confident in this team in the postseason, by the way. The bullpen, that's new. We haven't seen the bullpen be this effective at any point this season. So that's a little new. I don't know what to make of that. It's a good thing. The offense, though, is not anywhere near when this offense is at its best. Now, they didn't have Vinny Pasquantino. It sort of, you know, collided with that. So is him being there enough? I don't think it's enough, but it's a start to get, you know, the offense back to where it is sort of grooving at all cylinders. I love that they were aggressive on the base paths against Baltimore. I think they need to continue that in this series. And there will be moments, and I was yelling at the TV in some of them, when I'm like, what are you doing here? That's not the spot to run. I got to calm myself down on that because I do want them running. That's a part of the swag. That's a part of why the 14 and 15 Royals were so pesky to the rest of the because if you can get somebody on base, not only can they just steal second, which of course they can score from first. They can put pressure. They can do all those little things that maybe makes the defense make an error. Those things where if you don't play clean baseball, this aggressive Royals team will come get you. So, you know, when Blanco stole that base late in the game with Bobby Witt Jr. up at the plate, that one I'm like, let's not do that because now they can pitch around Bobby Witt Jr. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, run wild. If you get thrown out at second, and look, think about it this way. Like, if they get thrown out at second and you're like, oh, that kills it. I'm like, guys, they haven't. When was the last time the Royals rallied, right? Like, they're not hitting it anyway. So, yeah, steal second so that if they get a single, it scores the run because they ain't hitting for any power right now. Extra base hit, what's that? You know, so it's okay. Steal. Try to steal. If you get thrown out, who cares? Right? You're probably hitting into a double play these days lately anyway.
I think we all know how incredible the pitching was in the two games for the Royals against the Orioles. They can pitch that well against the Yankees for sure, but the result is not going to be like it was against the Orioles. Like, the Yankees have enough pop in their lineup and like, of course, like the top names of Judge and Soto and like all of that for sure. The Yankees are going to score more runs than the Orioles did in the wild card round. Even if the Royals pitch outstanding, the Yankees will score more runs. So you're not going to be able to get away with averaging a run and a half offensively if you're the Royals in the ALDS. I just don't think that we will be looking at a Royals series victory if they average a run and a half in their games in this series. So while the pitching has been incredible and it needs to continue, no doubt about it, and it doesn't really matter what they do. Like you just mentioned, it could be extra base hits and home runs and hit for power, which they haven't done in a while. More than likely, it's going to be playing more small ball and trying to find creative ways to move runners over and get them in. That's been the recipe the last couple of weeks. It hasn't been extremely fruitful, but it's been enough. They're going to have to do more than that, I think, in this series.
Run. I don't know if extra. Honestly, the hope is if the Royals are going to win a World Series, that they just start hitting for a little power, right? Like, I think that almost has to be a part of it. I think. I guess I'm just sort of assuming it'll happen at some point. So the dam will break and their offense will wake up a little bit, at least in the middle. If it doesn't, can they still do it? I mean, maybe. If the pitching's that good, but you're about to face the Yankees. I think that's asking a little much, right? You're about to face the Yankees. You know, if you get into the National League, you potentially face the Phillies, the Dodgers. They're going to have to hit. Can they? I think they can. But we've been waiting for it to, you know, we've been waiting for that hot streak for a while now. And they, you know, you go up against Gerrit Cole, you go up against Rodon. The Yankees can also pitch. The Yankees are really good. And I don't want to overestimate or overset expectations that are unrealistic for the Royals either. They're going to have to pitch their way too, but if they don't hit, it doesn't matter. Game one, Saturday. I think the Royals are going to win this series. We'll just put it that way, Tommy. Where's your head at on this?
It's still a toss-up for me. I think that this is probably a fairly obvious thing. The winner of game one, I think, will win the series.
Really? With Waka going up against Cole?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I know that obviously they're going to be able to come back with Reagans. They're going to be able to come back with Lugo, all of that. That's great. I just think from a momentum standpoint in a series like this, and especially knowing just the offensive struggles that the Royals have had, if they don't win game one, it's going to be a lot more difficult, I think, for them to win the series. So I'm going to go ahead and say whoever wins tomorrow night, in my mind, in the best of five, is going to win the series.
I don't agree that. I think if the Royals win game one, the Yankees are in real big trouble. But I absolutely think if the Royals lose game one, they can win the series, because they can lose to Cole twice in the series and still win the series. You know what I mean? And honestly, it's sort of that old strategy. Waka against Cole lets Reagan's Lugo pitch against not Cole. so they can each win a couple. You know what I mean? Like, there's that chicken and egg. Do you go ace versus ace, or do you sort of concede it? That's not what the Royals are doing.
Hey, the Orioles went ace versus ace in game one with Corbin Burns.
And lost. I know,
and
right,
lost.
Yeah.
And Burns pitched a really good game, and they kind of squandered him because Reagans was just that much better.
I know. I cannot wait. I'm so happy. I love it. I love that old Royals fans get to renew this old rivalry. I mean, these teams met a ton in the late 70s, like 5 years in a row or something crazy like that. We'll see. Starts Saturday. We'll have probably a little bit more on that in the second hour as we get you ready for it. You'll hear it here on KFH, these Royals playoff games, by the way. When we come back, let's talk just a little bit about Thursday night football, and then we'll come back. We'll make some picks to kick off hour number two. We'll talk a little high school football in hour number two. It's all coming for you here on Sports Daily. On the way out, let's give our HTO away, a free iced tea, a free coffee drink, iced or hot. Lots and lots of options. Get out there and check them out. All you got to do to win a couple of free ones is text the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. These will be good in either Wichita location, at the Derby location as well. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. That's TEA to the short code 20357. We're coming right back with more Sports Daily. NFL football available for free here on KFH and the Odyssey app. You can tune in to 97.5 and 1240 KFH Sunday morning at 8:15 for coverage as the Jets square off against the Falcons in London. Simply download the Odyssey app and search KFH at game time. You heard Thursday night football last night here on KFH and the Odyssey app. There was that, you know, it was that slow paced, drag it out game we all expected, right, Tommy? No, it was one of the bigger shootouts of the season. 66 points, an overtime win for the Falcons. Kirk Cousins, 509 yards and 4 touchdowns. Also threw an interception, but you want to talk about bucking some trends. Remember primetime Kirk Cousins? Never any good? He was good. Remember, worst quarterback in the league against the blitz, going up against one of the highest blitz rate teams in the NFL. Doesn't matter, man. Kirk Cousins was on it last night. As I have him, I did two things with two fantasy football teams, Tommy. I sat him last minute in one game for Sam Darnold, and I cut him in another league. I cut him. And he was awesome. Immediately picked up, and I'm like,
one of the leagues that you and I
Caleb
are in
Williams too.
One of the leagues that you and I are in together. I'm up against the guy that puts the league together, our buddy Josh Howell. And he's 4-0 and I'm 2-2 in this league. And I started Drake London, who was obviously phenomenal. And he had Kirk Cousins on the bench. And so I feel pretty happy about that. I think my chances to get a win and give him his first loss of the year, I think, are pretty high.
It was a brilliant game plan. Credit to Atlanta's coaches. And Baker Mayfield was really good yesterday too, by the way. The Bucs really did let that one slip away. But a credit to the Atlanta coaches, because basically everything that you thought they should and could and would do, they did the opposite, and it worked. Like, we went into that game and it was like, all right, the Falcons should run the ball here. You know, you don't want to put Kirk in this bad situation. You don't want to do all these things. And man, he threw the ball 58 times. 58 times. That means he had the opportunity to be blitzed 58 times. It was like the bizarro world last night. But here we go. The Falcons now 3-2. The Bucs now 3-2. I actually think these are two pretty good teams. I don't know who my favorite in that division is right now. The Bucs were, you know, the Bucs did what they wanted to do too. They're good teams. That was such a refreshing primetime game because he had all the offense. It was close. You could feel how much Al Michaels appreciated finally getting a good Thursday night game. But that was a really, really fun way to start the NFL week, and hopefully a continuing trend that these offenses are waking up in the NFL now.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that game plan. I really believed that Atlanta would come in and they would lean really heavily on Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
And Robinson got 12 carries. I mean, he made the most of those 12 carries, but that wasn't the primary focus of the offense. And it worked. I think it caught the Buccaneers on their heels a little bit. And you know, credit to Baker Mayfield in the offense for Tampa Bay because they hung with Atlanta. Like, they matched them, and it took
should have won the game.
Yeah, and it took overtime, obviously, on a walk-off TD for Atlanta to get the victory. Remember, it wasn't that long ago. Like, it was a season ago that the NFC South as a whole was awful. Like, they were awful. And really, it was the Baker Mayfield-led Buccaneers that sort of rose to the top. And they were improved, and Baker Mayfield was better and had kind of had a career renaissance. But they weren't elite by any means. They made the playoffs, but it wasn't like they were a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Now you look at that conference, the Saints have been able to be pretty effective offensively, at least early on in the year. What we've seen from the Falcons and Bucks have been impressive so far. Really, outside of Carolina in the middle of a rebuild, the rest of that conference is really solid.
It's good. And it might, in Carolina, might not be that bad with Andy Dalton either. We'll see. They've been certainly better since he's taken over. What a fun game. What a great way to start the NFL week. Credit to you if you're one of the very few people who actually started Kirk Cousins last night on your fantasy team, because it was not the week to do it, you know, based on everything we've seen. He won a lot of people games on his own. What a fun game. God, I had so much fun with that game last night. I love offense in the NFL, and I'm so sick of this slow-going offense. I know I'm probably in the minority, at least of a certain nature, but I like to see good quarterback play and things like that. Let's come back. Let's pick some football games. Speaking of, we'll have Paul Savage in, Brandon Zinner, TJ Cleland. The gang is in. We'll make some picks. We'll get some heat. We'll have some fun with it. That's next on Sports Day.